Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Lords Podcast with Will Rowe.
Many thanks for tuning in to the latest podcast and the final one of 2015. I'm very pleased to be joined by Middlesex spin bowler, Ollie Rayner. Welcome, Ollie.
Thanks very much for having me.
And joining Ollie is the UK editor of Crick Info, Andrew Miller.
Cheers, Will.
Nice to have you along. Right, there's plenty to discuss today with England's first test getting underway against South Africa next week. We'll look ahead to that series and discuss selection decisions as England announce that Alex Hales will open with Alistair Cook. My guests will also give their opinion on the first ever day-night test between Australia and New Zealand and whether it's the future of the game. As well as all this, we'll have the Lords podcast quiz. But first, I'd like to open up with some questions for Ollie that have come in from listeners under the hashtag AskRain. So thanks everyone who's tweeted in for your questions. We're going to do this in two rounds today, so there'll be more questions coming later in the podcast if you don't hear your question first up. Ollie, your first question, what's the best moment of your career so far from Lee Chatters?
Yeah, so I did have a small browse through them last night, so if I didn't get back to you last night, I do apologise because I was advised maybe to leave some for today. yeah, it's a very tricky one, but I was trying to think, although I sort of come on the scene as more of a bowler, I was thinking, you know, the feeling that I had when I scored that 100 against Sri Lanka on my first class debut, I can't really see too far past that, just purely my first exposure to the first class game, and then to have a feeling that I had not often felt in terms of getting hundreds. So that was hard to look past. And then, I mean, obviously the overall feeling of sensation from getting my wickets at the Oval a couple of years ago, I mean, that was just a different experience in a way.
15 wickets in a match, that was.
Yeah, and I was a bit more overwhelmed by that in terms of the whole occasion. And you know, it was against Surrey, and obviously people from London or around will be aware of the rivalry there between us and them. So that was a different feeling. But I would say in terms of singling out, you know, the maiden century, because I just didn't know how to feel. So it was quite a mixed bag of emotions.
Great stuff. And Keita Saha says, if you could relive one moment, what would it be? This doesn't have to be cricket.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I suppose I ought to say my wedding day, but unfortunately, yeah, no. There were a couple of great moments I had at school when I was younger, just in terms of, you know, playing football with all my mates in the school teams and things like that, which I would like to definitely live, maybe not a moment, but a year.
Yeah.
Outside of the educational sides of things, I did enjoy school. That the feeling of that 100 was just really special. I'd like for it to happen again. That or the wickets again, that would be great.
Great stuff. Dean Osborne says, what are your personal hopes for next season?
Yeah, I think Dean was one of the ones I did actually have a tweet back last night. I want to get back to taking wickets a lot. You know, I had a great year a couple of years ago. A year after that was poor, and then last year was pretty good. I just want to keep focusing on taking wickets, spinning the ball. It's easier said than done. Often I have to play a role in the team, which isn't always the attacking role. But you can build pressure also with taking wickets. So we'll really focus on that next year, hopefully.
Great stuff. Asad Abbas got a seasonal one here. What Middlesex player would give the best secret Santa present?
Well, I think I may have. I did this one as well. I said, apart from myself, obviously, I gave Podders a magic eight ball. He seems to find making decisions quite hard, so I thought that's probably better than the decisions he usually makes on his own. But our masseuse, Big Spike from New Zealand, got me a Nerf gun, which also
What's a Nerf gun?
It shoots sort of foam pellets. Yeah, you've been living in a cave. For which actually, when I lined it up against someone in our Christmas party, it came out a bit quicker than I was expecting. I'm glad my aim was off.
A couple of questions here. One from Margaret Newson and one from Nimra Balok. Why Harry Potter, and do you know any Harry Potter spells? You're a big Harry Potter fan.
I know, it's so sad. It's the sort of thing that gets brought up all the time. It's probably my own fault because I talk about it a lot. To be honest, I don't know. I think I just like that. I just like the fact that it's just not real in a way, and I'd love it. I really would love it to be real. You know, I think it's much the same as why people like Star Wars and things like that. I mean, it's totally mental, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You know. They must have been on acid or something when they thought these things up. But I don't know, just the thought that it's something that you have never experienced, I guess. And so you like the thought of it because you could never actually see it being done. So.
Absolutely. Do you read any other books? Or is it just the Harry Potter ones
I
that
have
you've
to
got
say,
into?
I don't read an awful lot. And I'm having a bit of a strop with YouTube at the moment because they've taken all the audio books off because of copyright, which I think is absolutely totally unfair, because I think the box set's about 180 quid or something for Stephen Fry. So if anyone would like to read them and then send them to me on tape, that'd be great.
Christmas present, there you go.
But yeah, I love it. I do enjoy it, definitely. But I read the Hunger Games book, one of the first one, and that was the first and only book I think I've read cover to cover. So yeah.
Great stuff. Right, well, now, England coach Trevor Bayliss has said that Alex Hales will open the batting with Alistair Cook in South Africa. The announcement came before the team left for South Africa. The Nottinghamshire batsman will make his test debut on Boxing Day in the first test at Durban, while Nick Compton or Gary Balance will fight it out for the number three spot left vacant after Ian Bell was dropped. So Hales will now become Cook's eighth opening partner since the retirement of Andrew Strauss. Is it the right decision, Andrew? I'll throw it to you.
Well, I'm a very, very big Hales fan. I've always thought from the get-go that he had the capacity to be a test batsman. I think England would be very slow on the uptake when it comes to recognising that there are more than one way to be a test batsman. And look at David Warner, look at Brendan Sehwag, opening batsmen who go out of there and wallop it from the outset. I mean, you can't deny they are classy test batsmen, even though they're not traditional mould. And so, yeah, I think Hales could very easily slot into that sort of mould. But unfortunately, I think the timing sucks a bit for him at the moment. I think he's... I suspect that announcement was made that he will open the batting because I think he needs a bit of confidence back. And to be given that backing nice and early, saying, look, you are our man, go forth and conquer. The trouble is, it kind of reminds me a bit of the 1990s in a way, which obviously England far, far removed from that. But, you know, they've had a guy who was in sensational form, who they weren't using, and then finally they pick him when he's out of form.
Yeah.
And they used to do that a lot with batsmen. I seem to remember Graham Thorpe making his first appearances for England after he'd been particularly good. That's a completely wrong example. But the point still stands that I think... In an ideal world, he probably would have made that move perhaps last winter when they went back to Jonathan Trott. I think maybe going out to the Caribbean with Hales in that role then might have been preferable to staying in Morkel and Kikiso Radaba coming up against him in a Durban test. It's a pretty bit of a baptism of fire there.
Yeah, the Trott decision did seem a bit backward. Ollie, question, why have England sort of struggled so much to find a replacement for Strauss?
Yeah, it's a good question, and... we were discussing it lightly beforehand. I don't know is my honest answer, because I think Cook plays in such a way that I think they're worried that they're going to have, like, traditionally an opener to bat with him. If they batted the same, you know, it could be a long day, although you have got 5 days. But the way the game's going now, I totally agree with Andrew. I think the key with Hales is if he does play, he's got to play his way and not get into this, oh no, you know, all the other openers have struggled, I've got to fight through and score something like a 30 off 130 balls, you know, something like that. So that would be interesting. But, I mean, if I'm brutally honest, I just don't know. It's a hard spot to fill. And I also feel in agreement with Andrew about the whole sort of introducing the openers when they did. Because, okay, this summer didn't really go well for Live, but he has basically come in and made his test debut. Okay, he was against New Zealand, but that was only a short series. And then you've got the best team in the world with one of the one of the best teams in the world, one of the biggest sort of occasions in the Ashes. So he could have possibly been introduced in West Indies as well if they were thinking of bringing someone in for the summer. But yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how it all goes, really.
I mean, it's interesting. They've just finished the first warm-up game out in South Africa. It was rained off on the final day. But, I mean, the big talking point coming out of that was Hales' form. He got eight in both innings. And the bowler got him out both occasions, Junior Dala, some Zambian-born seamer. But he was scathing afterwards. He was really fighting talk, saying, you know, I've worked him out. He doesn't like the ball coming back into him, and you know, really, really mouthing off. But you can't deny that in the second innings in particular, he got 8 from 42 balls. He looked horribly tentative. And there's a still that I haven't seen a lot of him actually batting, but there's one particular frame of him playing a forward defensive, and it's such a determined, I'm not going to get out type of forward defensive thing. That's not Hales' natural game. You know,
Hales attacks,
or at least he defends with flowing confidence as opposed to help. I don't want to get out of it.
I think such as, you know, if you look at, like you said, did you say eight partners?
It's been, it's been Compton, Carberry, Root, Robson, Trott, Lyth and Moeen Ali.
It's almost like when Alex Ferguson left Man U. Who really wanted that job? You know, it's a job that you're really the odds are against you if you look at it that way. I think however they do it, someone's got to go in there and be given a run. And it's not easy, because we're not talking about club cricket now, we're talking about playing for England. But the truth of the matter is, you know, there's no one who's churning them out year in, year out. Every year it's a different person in county cricket who scores 1,000 runs in May. Mm. And they go, oh wow, this, you know, awesome, great, we've got another one. Yeah. But it's never the same person every year. And, you know, until that time, they're going to have to try and stick with something.
And it has to be said, though, they are enormous shoes to fill. I mean, it's easy to underrate Strauss because, you know, he's not the most demonstrative of batsmen, but you can't deny he was an absolute giant in that position, particularly on the last tour of South Africa. Got those 300s he got. He was sensational. 300, 600 runs in the series in the last tour of South Africa, which basically won England the series. I mean, you know, that was his first overseas tour. I mean, if he can do that straight off the bat and then, you know, captain England the way he did. I mean, that's a phenomenal career and massive shoes to fill. It's no one's going to find it easy, especially if you've got Alistair Cook as not exactly a small presence alongside you. It must be fairly daunting to try and replace a guy like that.
Right, there's also an issue for England in the number three spot. Ian Bell's been dropped. Gary Balance and Nick Compton have both been recalled. It looks like it's going to be a straight shootout between the two of them. Ollie, Nick's here. Colleague and teammate at Middlesex, do you think he's the man to fill that position, or do you think they'll go with Balance?
The new look sort of England approach to things, maybe they will give him a go. You know, they seem to be, like with the Hales decision, you know, they're bringing Footit in and people like this, people who don't really know much about. If they're doing well, they've got to come in. And yeah, Compo didn't score like 2,000 championship runs, but the way he scored his runs for us this year was very impressive on a year, as far as I can see, wasn't really that, you know, fruitful for opening batters. So, a top order batters. So, you know, I'd like to see Compo get back in. It has been his sole, goal for, you can tell his main drive is to get back into that side.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you can't really argue with Balance's stats. You know, he's got good stats. He's just had one bad kind of series or summer maybe. So again, without wanting to sit on the fence every question, I don't know, but I mean, from Middlesex point of view, you'd like to see Compo in there.
I'd go with Compton. I completely agree. I saw several of his innings here last summer, and one in particular, I think he got 70 odd, and I think it was the Durham game, wasn't it, when Harris got his 9 for 70 odd in the second innings when wickets were falling all over the shop, and he just refused to budge. His understanding of his off stump, I haven't seen anyone with a better judgment of off stump in a long time, and that's the sort of skill you're going to need when you've got Steyn and Morkel pounding away at you on a green top in Durban. I mean, I think it's, you know, you can angle for speed of scoring and all the reasons why I believe that Alex Hales is a good long term selection, but equally you can't deny that if you're going up against the best seam attack in the world, you want a guy who's not going to get out, and I like the look of Compo's stickability. And again, we're talking about the trouble of replacing Strauss. I mean, he was the best of the fits in that top order position.
Statistics-wise, Compton stood out from the rest of them.
It's, you know, honestly, it's impressive. you know, his mental stamina and how he's focused on what he's doing is. And it's funny you said about his off stump. I mean, if he gets out LBW, he'll tell you exactly whether he thought that was right or not, and very unbiasedly. He'll never blame a decision, but he'll give you this explanation, and you'll look at it and go, "God, he's right."
Yeah,
you know, he does know his stuff, and he doesn't blame anything else. So yeah, I'd be interested to see where they go with that one.
And the rest of the batting lineup, it looks like Joe Root probably in at four with James Taylor at five.
Yeah, I'd like to look at Taylor. I think he's got something about him. I think he's really found a second wind after sort of being another of those guys who's been oddly overlooked. Well, oddly overlooked in his case, he probably is.
No one could see him.
But you know, it's an obvious slot for him there. I think he's got a bit of get up and go about the way he goes about his scoring, and he's shown that in all forms as well. So again, he's a type of guy who can play several roles, I think, for England, and particularly without the experience of Ian Bell, I think someone versatile like him who can attack and defend is probably the fine thing to have.
Yeah, he can definitely change the tempo of his game to suit the team. And I think he's just a great bloke to have in the team. I don't know if you ever come into contact with him on a one-to-one level. He's just a good bloke to be around, and I think he fits that new mould of where England are trying to go with their team now. So I wish him all the best, and I hope he does get a good go at it.
In the bowling department, I'd like to bring in a quote from Graham Smith. It's an interview that you did with him, Andrew, in which he basically said there's no comparison between Dale Steyn and James Anderson, to the effect that Steyn is far superior in his mind. It looks like this series could be decided between, you've got kind of Steyn and Morkel, and then Anderson and Broad. Is Smith just being punchy for the sake of it, or is there some truth in that?
I think there's probably some truth, but also he's being punchy. I mean, I think to be fair, Anderson's performance in the UAE was sensational, but he didn't get the rewards, and I think that's often been the way with some of his performances. I mean, I think he was making the point that Steyn's record in Asia in particular just marks him out as this guy who's more versatile, whereas actually Anderson's record in Asia is not as bad as the stats perhaps make it look. I mean, he doesn't go for runs out there, which is part of the battle won. He doesn't often get massive amounts of wickets, maybe gets four fours instead of fives and six fours. But, I mean, he was immense in the UAE, as was Broad. And on balance, I mean, given that Steyn missed three of the tests in India and there is still a doubt about him, is he on the wane a little bit? I would suggest that actually of the two new ball pairings, Broad and Anderson are the outstanding pairing in world cricket at the moment. And Steyn and Morkel perhaps are just on the turn a bit. I mean, Kagiso Radaba, this young quick guy, is an interesting one. I'm looking forward to seeing him play, and he will be turning it up a notch, I'm sure. But I mean, to say that Steyn is over the hill is a complete nonsense. But to suggest that he may not be quite the bowler he was when England were last out there is probably not unfair.
And there's good news for England. Your teammate Stephen Finn is back out in South Africa with them now. He won't play the first test, we believe, but that will be good for the England camp to have a guy that can produce on quick, bouncy pitches.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's obviously a good formula that's proven for South Africa and Morkel and Steyn with the different approaches to bowling. I'm a big fan of Finney's, obviously. I'm not just saying it because I play for Middlesex, but because I do play for Middlesex, I really do see what he can produce. You know, everyone goes through ups and downs in their career. I think he's definitely, you know, mentally back to where he needs to be. If he can just get over this fitness and hit his straps, then I think he's going to cause a bit of a headache to selectors, definitely, and hopefully he gets a gig as well.
And the speed with which they got him back in is telling as well. I mean, he bowled two 4-over spells for the Lions, and you could tell just from the scorecard. I mean, I was watching the ball by ball, so it was giving updates on Crick Info about each delivery, and they were rapid right from the outset, and, you know, getting wickets right when they needed them. And, you know, admittedly, it's only 8 overs he's bowled since his comeback, so it's barely half a spell in a test match, but it's you know, it is a sign that they rate him as a guy that they want to get right back in the frame as soon as possible.
I also think, sorry, just on that,
yeah,
I think with Broad and Anderson, like we said, they're quite good in terms of control generally, like you're saying. And yeah, Finney may leak a few, but he does have a knack of taking wickets. So you do need that at times. I mean, the amount of times someone like Finney comes into our attack, obviously it's Finney and it's county level, but, you know, he can just turn a game just when you need it. And he could leak a few runs, but if you've got the guys that can control the game from the other end, you need a wicket taker.
He is an attacking bowler, absolutely, and he takes wickets, and it doesn't matter if his economy is four or five for a bit. If he takes three or four wickets, then
if you've got Anderson or Broad or both or whatever in the team, they're going at two and a half, then who cares?
Yeah. Ollie, I'd like to ask you this question. Samit Patel has retained his place in the squad for this tour to South Africa. He came in when Zafran Sari was got his finger injured, so he was his replacement, and Adil Rashid now hasn't gone to South Africa. I mean, firstly, will Samit really feature in this series? And as a spin bowler, what kind of message does this send to you? Because it seems a little bit like the thinking is muddled.
Yeah, I think, I should probably have done more homework. I didn't.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I realised that Rash wasn't going at all, but I think the thinking behind that is that they just won't use a second spinner in South Africa. I think they're expecting, you know, all going well, no injuries, Moen's going to do the spinning. I'll just check he's on there, is he?
Moen is going.
I haven't
going,
made an absolute
yeah.
rope.
Moen is there. In that case, then, why take Samit Patel? Because you're effectively taking him as a batsman.
I think I already had this this very friendly discussion with Angus Fraser. And I think it's more the fact that rather than have Rash just sitting out there rotting, I think he's playing cricket somewhere else in the world at that time. Geared up more towards the one day.
Yeah, well, he's playing for Adelaide Strikers in the Big Bash, so he's basically they're saying that you can find some white ball form with the World 2020 coming up.
That's it, World 2020,
which is a really really good point, and it's a welcome sign that England are thinking more laterally instead of putting everything into Test cricket and then occasionally thinking, oh whoops, we've got a world event coming up and we've screwed up again.
And I think actually I had a discussion with Gus about that, and actually afterwards I went, yeah, good point, fair enough. So
cheers, boss.
So it does make sense. Why have him rotting out there if he can go and play something that's gearing himself him up and working for England?
I agree with the Rashid decision. I'm just saying I like Samit Patel. I think he's great. I think he's a good player. But I'm saying, why take him if you know you're not going to play him?
Well, do we know? I mean, that's the big question. I mean, the Moen, you've got to admit that Moen did not have a good tour of the UAE. Admittedly, he was played out of position by batting, open batting, which he was probably unsuitable for in those conditions. And as a consequence, he's lost form. I mean, he was a gun player for England throughout the summer and last year in particular. But if anyone in this squad is going to put pressure on him for that crucial role of the spinning number eight batsman, which is something England really put investment in, the only alternative really is Samit Patel. It's given that Ollie's got a groin injury, obviously.
Otherwise, I'm sure I'd be first on the team sheet.
Well, good point, well made.
Well, I also think with that, I mean, I don't know where I sit with that. If let's say Moen doesn't start, then you know Rashid's definitely the better choice between Samit and Rashid.
Agreed, but Rashid has spent so much time sitting on the sidelines anyway that it makes more sense, I think.
But then they played Rashid in the UAE. See, we're going back around.
Yeah.
This is my
what
point.
What do we know?
If he's not going, then you're essentially saying that Samit Patel is your third best and you're happy for your second best to be playing for Adelaide
but
Strikers.
But I think realistically, if you want to revert to the role that Moeen played reasonably well for England, which is that containing spinner as opposed to an attacking spinner, then you're not going to trust Rash to be the containing spinner. If you want a guy to hold up an end while the seamers rotate, I don't think Rashid's your man. But Samet, I reckon, could probably do that job. I mean, it's literally a case of doing a job as opposed to really anything more, which is unfortunately the state that England have got into with their spin bowling, which is something that Ollie has talked about at length and very eloquently, in my opinion.
Oh, I had some very expert help on that.
I believe there's a ghostwriter in the room. Well, while that tour to South Africa is going on, MCC will also be on tour. They'll also be in South Africa to coincide with England's test tour. That's being managed by Middlesex Director of Cricket, Gus Fraser. Names on that tour include O.A. Shah, Wes Durston, who's skippering it, John Simpson, Neil Dexter, Ned Eckersley. Ollie, you didn't make the cut.
Yeah, I was saying earlier, I'm going to have words with someone because Dexter's getting on all the bloody tours this year. but yeah, I mean, that would be a good tour. And Big Gus getting a nice stint out in the sun as well. It has its perks being a selector, obviously.
Yeah, back out in South Africa with the MCC.
So. Gus doesn't strike me as the type who really enjoys being in the sun, though, let's face it.
Well.
No comment.
Right. Well, at the end of last month, Australia played New Zealand in the first ever day-night test match. The Aussies won by 3 wickets and the game was played with a pink ball. Before the match, there were some doubts about whether the format would work, but following the match, it was widely seen as a success as the Adelaide Oval saw 123,000 fans through the gates across the 3 days. MCC's long championed the concept of day-night test cricket with the annual County Curtain Raiser, the Champion County Match, now taking place in Abu Dhabi under lights using a pink ball. So, day-night test cricket. Is this the future or is this a flash in the pan? Where do we sit on this one?
Well, let's address that particular match because I think it's a very case-by-case thing, in my opinion, where day-night test cricket is concerned. I think having it at a ground like Adelaide Oval, with the lights on, the crowd full, the weather beautiful, the sunset's glorious. It was, leaving aside the fact that the match finished in 3 days, it was a spectacle. It was spectacular to watch. And frankly, that is as important, in my opinion. Making test cricket attractive and a spectacle is as important as competitive. And by that, I mean, you know, at the same time, England were playing in concrete dust bowls in the middle of the desert with nobody watching, and it was pretty tedious to view.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not an attractive thing to draw people in. Whereas that, you know, if you come across that as a passing customer, you think, wow, I want a part of that. You may not understand it initially because that's the thing about Test cricket. But if you think, yeah, I quite like spending my evening doing this and watching this and taking this in, that's great. But you've got to pick and choose your venues. I don't think it would work necessarily in England because the daylight goes on longer at the height of the summer, so the floodlights wouldn't actually kick in, and then in September it's freezing.
True. Also in England there is not the same issue with the grounds are pretty full, most of them.
Indeed.
So you don't really have that issue. It seems with day-night test cricket, the spectacle, the spectators, the broadcasters, I think, like it. The players, and there was... After the match, the Federation of International Cricketers Associations did a survey to which 20 of the 22 players that took part in that match did complain about the suitability of the pink ball, and they said it needs refining, a bit of work. So I guess my question to you, Ollie, is it almost seems like the players on one hand are not huge fans, and then on the other side you've got the broadcasters and the spectators saying, yes, this is great.
I think one of the main things we're going to have to think about, really, even as players, is, you know, getting fans through the door is what it's all about, and that's where the wages come, etc., etc. So in terms of if those figures are working, you've got to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I wasn't a massive fan, to be honest, of the 2020s being on a Friday. Whether that's worked or not financially, I don't know, but they've got to give that a go, and if it doesn't, then they've got to go back to what financially works on it. So... But yeah, in terms of being a player, the ball is it's tricky. There are two very key stages in the game where the game's more one-sided than the other. So that would be twilight with the pink ball. So I don't know, the ball would possibly be, what time do they start? About 2, is it?
So about 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
2 and 3 in the afternoon.
And then the twilight
period. So you're looking at, what, 40,
50 overs old, I suppose, isn't it?
So then the ball's, yeah, okay, so that's what I was looking for. So that's 40 overs old, and although the ball's lost its shine, it does seem to be a bit harder to pick up when batting, and in the field, in all fairness. dependent on the backs, the backdrop. And then the new ball is then due 9 o'clock at night or whatever, where it just does tend to do a lot more under the lights. You know, we've seen it in white ball cricket.
Yeah.
You know, it pitches tend to do more at night. So those are two periods that would very much swing probably in the bowling's favour. And then just in terms of picking the ball up, it's funny. It does kind of leave a trace a little bit behind it, so trying to track it can be a bit tricky. But yeah, I mean,
because you've played in the Champion County match in 2014, you played for MCC against Durham, so you've had experience of playing in those exact conditions, although out in Abu Dhabi, but it's the same conditions.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, I did. It was enjoyable, but it was tough at times. Like I'm saying, there were definite parts of the day stroke night where it did become tougher. And like I say, even when it's pitch black, picking up the pink ball, it does seem to leave a tracer if it's hit at you hard enough. So it's not always enjoyable if you can't see a ball, and you know, really, by the look, if when you look at everyone else and it's coming at you and you haven't picked it up, it's not a great feeling.
Obviously, speaking as someone who's never going to have to face up to the pink ball in twilight, I mean, that doesn't actually bother me quite so much. That notion that as a spectator, again, if this is given a chance and you get to learn the rhythms of pink ball cricket, and you learn, oh my god, it's twilight, you've got a well set batsman, you know it's getting dark, and the new ball's been, or the bowler has been hidden, held back, and is nice and fresh going into that period. You will know that the tactics are going to get ramped up. You know that there's a massive passage of play coming up. It could be fascinating. You know,
have to be some understanding girlfriends and wives out there as well. You're going to the cricket till 10. I was happy when it was 6, half 6. Now it's 10 o'clock. Yeah. What state are you going to be at then?
But also, I'm just on the flip side of that. I mean, in this particular pink ball game in Adelaide, most of the collapses happened in the morning. I mean, New Zealand lost 7 wickets in the morning session on one of them. So, I mean, the point is, I think you're spot on with what you're saying, but equally, you can't necessarily assume that that's going to be the issue every
time.
We'll
have to give it a go.
You've got to give it a go. Suck it and see.
It would have to, yeah, exactly.
Great stuff. Well, I'm glad we've cleared that one up. Now we're on to round two of hashtag Ask Rains. So these are the final questions which have come in on Twitter for Ollie. We'll get straight into them. Ken Grime, have you ever been unlucky enough to be mistaken for Robbie Savage?
Yeah, I didn't know how to quite take that one. From what I can gather, he's not looked at particularly fondly in general. So I can't work out if he's a Rain supporter or not there, but I haven't, it has to be said.
Never. Interesting. It may have been the photo that we used on Twitter, but I don't quite see it myself. Do you?
I don't know. Now you mention
it.
A bit more of a mullet.
Well, it is winter. I am growing it out a little bit, yeah.
Craig Robson asks, what is your favourite wicket you've ever taken? Is there any particular scalp?
Oh, this is... Yeah, I don't know is my honest answer. I mean, I took a few when I was a bit younger, and they meant a lot to me, and they were big players. I got Thorpe. I got Butcher. I got Crawley. I got a few in my first real year without Mushtaq around, and they meant a lot to me. And there were a couple of Vaughan. You know, I got some really good names, but I did. I got Peterson out in front of a packed crowd.
Nice.
At Lords 2020, it admittedly caught on the boundary, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because at the time, a lot was going on about Kevin Peterson, so
it was part of that whole Peterson saga.
So it was quite enjoyable. Yeah.
Who caught it?
David Milan. I thought as soon as it came off the bat, I was like, oh no. And a big gust of wind came and kept it in Lords somehow, and David took it very casually. So yeah. Happy days.
Great stuff. Simon Dewhurst says, if you weren't a cricketer, what would your ideal job be?
Oh, it's a stay-at-home dad, I think. I don't know. I'm actually I'm hoping, obviously, the cricket will be my job for a few more years to come, but I am at that age now where I'm trying to go out and have a look at a few bits and bobs. It looks like it's too late to be a professional footballer or a golf pro, so I'm not sure. Maybe a games tester. I could do that at home on the sofa, you know, Xbox One games.
I'm getting a PCA press release. I'm getting several of them the other day. One guy on the circuit's training to be a barber at the moment, which is quite interesting. I can't remember who it was, but as we've
already established with my haircut, I probably couldn't go into that. No one would want a haircut from me.
Dean Carter asks, how does it feel to be the David Beckham of German cricket?
I liked this one very much on Twitter. Thank you very much. The German annual cricket awards were on in Cologne a couple of weeks ago, and I was asked if I'd like to go. I mean, it wasn't specific to me; it was put out to the players. But my wife had something planned for me already, which was very lucky of me. I wouldn't have said I was the David Beckham of German cricket, but if I am, then I'm flattered, and maybe I need to get some body art, you know.
For those listeners that are a bit confused at this moment, we could just add that you were born in Germany.
I was. My dad was in the forces, so I was born out there. I actually just come back from Hamburg this weekend as well.
So was I.
Well, there you go.
I'm an army brat too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's always quite interesting when I get to the passport control in Germany and they look at me, and then they start going, okay, they're going to talk German. And they always do, and I go, sorry, mate, not a word. no idea.
Great stuff. Well, thanks for those questions. Keep them coming in our next podcast, which will be in 2016. As is customary, we're going to finish with the Lords podcast quiz. I know you two have been waiting for this. It's the usual format. I'll give you a non-cricketer and a cricketer. All you have to do is tell me who is older to win a point. Ollie, you can go first. And Andrew, you can go second.
That's better.
Was that disgust with me winning the toss?
Yeah. I won't have to edit that. Well,
I mean, I've been holding that one to say. It's like the toss this year, isn't it? Isn't it next year? They're going to just offer it to the
away side.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's for another podcast.
Isn't it?
No, sorry. I retract that statement. I know nothing.
It's a fact, but yeah, we'll save it to another podcast. Ollie, who is older? Michael Owen, former England footballer, or India batsman Yuvraj Singh?
I'll go Owen, I think.
So Michael Owen was 18 in the 98.
He had his birthday recently.
Right. So if he was in 18 in 98, that means he was born in 1980. I'll have to go Yuvraj just to be different, but
it's Michael Owen. Yeah, 2 years older. Ollie, take a 1-0 lead. Flying. Andrew, who is older? German Chancellor and Times Person of the Year, Angela Merkel, or former England captain, Graham Gooch?
Gosh. Gucci. Well, he was born July 53, I believe.
Oh, this isn't fair. Come on. Seriously.
So
do you know the number one from that year as well?
Bill Haley in the comments.
Probably. that doesn't help me with Merkel, though, does it? But... I'll go Merkel.
I'll who was the other one?
Graham Gooch.
I'll go with Gucci.
Graham Gooch is indeed 1 year older than Angela Merkel. So Ollie,
I think you're getting too technical with it.
I'm thinking it. Ollie, who is older, Miley Cyrus or Joe Root?
I'd say Miley Cyrus maybe. I have no idea.
It's a close one. I'll give you that.
Yeah, she's been.
She's been
she's
through
been,
a lot.
She's been through a lot, hasn't she? But I reckon she's.
So has Joe.
She's been through a lot, but then she started when she was about 8, so she's probably still. He's still a whippersnapper. I'll go for Joe, just to be different.
It's Joe Root by a year, so he's back
in the
it.
Game.
So it's 2-1 with two to play. Andrew, who is older? Cameron Diaz. Or the former Sri Lanka captain, Mahela Jayawardena.
I think he's the same age as me, which is getting old now. So, Cameron Diaz. No, she must be in her 40s, surely. I'm going to get Cameron Diaz.
Cameron Diaz older. I probably would have gone that. I'll go for Mahela.
Oh, you're being such a gent here, Ollie. It is Cameron Diaz. Yeah. She's actually 5 years older than Jayawardena.
Right,
here we go.
The England Lions are coming back from the dead to win 3-2.
Here we go, 2-2. I think Ollie to go first on this one. Britney Spears or England's leading wicket taker in Test matches, James Anderson. Again, there's not much in it.
I'm gonna go Britney. She does feel like she's, but again, she started young, but it feels like she's been around forever.
Yeah. Well, he's,
how many comebacks can you have?
Yeah. You know, so he was born in 82, I believe. So when was Hit Me Baby One More Time? That was a hit in 90...
I wouldn't know, mate. I didn't Google it or anything. I'm doing the research for this.
You know, leaving aside everything else, all time classic in my opinion. But I reckon that was 97-ish, and she would have been a teenager then. So I'm going to go Jimmy. Just
Britney is older.
Yeah.
So Ollie takes a 3-2 victory. Well done.
I like the older ladies.
Great stuff. Well, we've come to the end of the podcast. So just, Ollie, what have you got coming up over the festive period? I believe you're nursing an injury at the moment.
I'm nursing an injury which has very disappointingly got me out of fitness training. I'm going back home to Eastbourne to spend time with my family, which should be interesting. It's always good fun. Then we're back in training 4th of January. So, yeah, hopefully I'm not too fat.
Great stuff.
My mum always gets me a Christmas Yule log, which I can't work out whether to have it in chunks or just to get it out of the way early. So I don't know yet.
All in one, that's what I say. Yeah. And Andrew, what's going on in the Miller household?
Well, we're going to have Christmas at home in London. Then on Boxing Day, I'm falling out of bed at stupid o'clock with a hangover to start up Cricket vs. Bobble commentary. So,
very nice.
Straight in the deep end for the test match. So, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good test and hopefully a good Christmas as well.
Great stuff. Well, you know, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, chaps.
Thank you, and you.
And for those who've tuned in, many thanks. We'll be back in 2016 with more cricketing stories from Lords. So remember to follow us on Twitter, our handle's at Home of Cricket. Be our friend on Facebook. And for all the latest news from Lords, just go to lords.org. Have a wonderful festive period and see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.